Good evening, it's 6:30, and a special fundraising edition of Front Page PM. We'll hear from Kentucky Public Radio Capital Bureau Chief Kenny Colston on this week's happenings in Frankfort. Plus, we begin a new occasional series on homelessness in our rural communities and how a nonprofit is working to grow employment in the Purchase area. That and more on Front Page PM from WKMS News. I'm Chad Lampe. This is a listener-supported local news program, and we appreciate your support by way of a pledge of support by calling 800-599-4737 or WKMS.org. Lawmakers in Frankfort have been hard at work over the past week in the Kentucky General Assembly. A proposed statewide indoor smoking ban has cleared its first legislative hurdle, and the Senate has passed four constitutional amendments. Kentucky Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Kenny Colston gives Rick Hallett the latest on what's happening in Frankfort.
So are the lawmakers back in session today?
They did come in session today. The House actually had a kind of busy day. They passed the three road plan bills, obviously the transportation budget, that cabinet's budget. They passed the two-year road plan, and they passed a joint resolution, which has the effect of law, but basically that's the what's called the six-year plan. It's the other 4 years, and it's kind of the wish list of everybody, kind of gives them a blueprint for 2 years from now, what they want to do again. So the House passed all three of those bills and promptly sent them to the Senate and passed a few other small changes as well.
Let's talk about some of the business that has been conducted. You mentioned the budget. Where does it stand now?
Well, the Senate has the budget in their hands. They've had it for about a week. They've had a lot of meetings, a few committee meetings, but nothing really publicly. I expect the Senate to pop out their changes to the budget this upcoming week. I don't know exactly what day. There's some confusion on how quickly the Senate will cobble together all those proposals, but it could be early this week. Senate leadership is meeting over the weekend to hammer out the final details of the budget, so I would expect the Senate to come out this week. We already know there will be changes. The question is, are there changes that the House can go with, or are they talking about monumental changes? And I would be surprised if they're monumental changes, because neither side is really acting like they're going to go into a special session, that they're going to have to stop the clocks or not be able to get this budget out on time. So I think you'll see the budget pop out of the Senate, you know, obviously this coming up week. You could have conference committees set up by Thursday or Friday, and they could work over the weekend, obviously basketball allowing. But, you know, going into that last week, conference could come together, and they actually pass a budget out on time that they don't have to worry about vetoes from the governor with, because they'll have time to override those vetoes.
And a couple of drug-related measures. Where do we stand on the pseudoephedrine regulation bill?
The pseudo bill will probably come up for a committee vote on Monday. The House Judiciary Committee has a special meeting planned. Obviously, that agenda has not been posted yet. That's what happened this week when the Senate Bill 2 came up. You know, it was kind of last minute, but they have it for upon adjournment on Monday, so that would be late Monday evening. We're talking 5, 6 o'clock. My expectation is with the changes that bill probably passes. House Speaker Greg Stumbo supports the bill. That's obviously a big hurdle you have to clear anytime you have a bill in the House. And I think there will be some floor amendments that take away some of the restrictions, make it a little bit more relaxed, but I don't know that those amendments will pass. I think the bill that we saw come out of the Senate will basically pass the House. When it comes to the synthetic drug bill, I believe that'll pass the Senate. I don't see a lot of changes there. And really, the only other thing drug-related that we're looking at is House Bill 4, whether the Kentucky Medical Association and their lobbying efforts weakens that bill in the Senate or not.
Now, would the pseudoephedrine bill still require a prescription?
No. What the compromise on this PSE bill does is that it allows anybody over-the-counter to get 7.2 grams of pseudoephedrine-containing medicine a month. You know, your Sudafed, your Mucinex, that's roughly two boxes. After that, you can go to a doctor. If you need more than that, let's say you have asthma or allergies, you can go to a doctor, and a doctor can prescribe 7.5 grams a month. And so basically, you know, what they're saying is that basically you can have, you know, four boxes at a time, you know, before, and it's a 24-gram annual limit. So basically they say, you know, for the average person, this will give you four or five boxes a year. You know, this will take care of two boxes in the springtime, two boxes in the fall where everybody gets their stuffy nose. And then if you, you know, have a long-term, if you're taking it for maintenance, for symptoms related to asthma or allergies. The doctor's prescription will allow you to take the lower dosage pills all year long without, you know, you'd have to see a doctor, but it would allow you to get those prescriptions all year long.
And you mentioned synthetic drug crackdown. Are we talking about the so-called bath salts and that sort of thing?
That's exactly what we're talking about. And the legislature has passed one of these bills every session. And what they're doing now is that they're basically saying, listen, you all change these chemical compounds and these names faster than we meet every year. So we're going to take a look at that. We're going to attack the compounds. That's what we're going to do. If you change this drug or if you simulate this effect of, you know, let's say marijuana or cocaine or something like that, it is still the same offense. You know, we're not attacking individual drugs now. We are going after the chemical compounds, and then that way it doesn't matter how you change it chemically or if you change its name. If we catch you, you're in trouble.
Sounds like some really nasty stuff, the bath salts. There's really been a lot of horror stories coming out of, you know, the abuse of the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's just insane. The Representative John Tilley, who has shown videos of just it looks like 18-year-old kids who are just out of their mind. I mean, just laughing hysterically 1 minute and then having the most confused look, scared look on their faces. I mean, the testimony and everything else on this, it's been wild. It is quite crazy. And in some cases, apparently, you can just walk into your neighborhood convenience store and buy these things. So that's what lawmakers want to do. They want to take that out. They're going after some of these convenience stores who sell these things, and they're really saying, you know what, we're tired of these little fixes. We're going all in on ending this problem.
On another topic, there's been a lot of wrangling over the possible addition of the University of Pikeville to the state university system. Where does that stand?
Well, that bill has been changed to more of a scholarship program for those in Eastern Kentucky that college juniors or seniors who probably have gone through 2 years of community college can go to UPI, go to the University of the Cumberland, any of those private colleges or any of the public partnerships that Morehead or Eastern Kentucky has, and finish their four-year bachelor's degree. They get some scholarship money with that. Also, the UPike report that Governor Steve Beshear commissioned came out yesterday. It basically said, yes, making UPike a public school would obviously help raise education levels in that area, but the report said they didn't think it would raise it enough and that they would be better off collaborating more and doing the scholarship program like the UPike bill now does. Of course, Speaker Stumbo ripped that proposal, says, you know, these people are from out of state. They don't know what goes on there. I live in that area, and UPike would do wonders. So basically, it's the second verse, same as the first, and they'll probably pass that scholarship bill out this session, and next session, the UPike discussion will probably come right back up.
Where are we on the session's timetable? Are we kind of nearing the end?
Yeah, well, I mean, Monday will be day 50, and that'll be basically 10 or 11 days. So there's a lot of issues we talk about every week, and those issues haven't passed both chambers in the same form. So, you know, they'll have to get the budget out. After they do the budget, if everything goes as planned, they'll probably have 3 or 4 days, just regular days, for them to try to hatch compromises on other bills, either these drug bills, the dropout age, numerous things that we've talked about. And then they'll go home for roughly, you know, 11 days, let the governor see what he vetoes, a line item in the budget or overall bills, and they'll come back for 1 day on April 12th and try to override those vetoes. So basically, I mean, we're down the last quarter. We're down the stretch they come. So lawmakers are probably going to be scrambling. We'll have a busy next 2 weeks here.
Kenny Colston is the Frankfort Bureau Chief for Kentucky Public Radio. Kenny, thanks again for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
You hear Kenny's reports every day during WKMS Newscast, and you can find his online reports at news.wkms.org. Next on Front Page PM, a look at our series on rural homelessness begins and a look at a group trying to grow employment opportunities in the Four Rivers region. This is Front Page PM from WKMS News. This is Front Page PM. I'm Chad Lampe. For the past 14 years, the nonprofit West Kentucky Workforce Investment Board has worked with the unemployed in our region to provide resources for those looking for new jobs. The WKWIB released a draft of their economic development plan for the next year this week. Shelley Baskin spoke with the board's local director, Sheila Clark, about the WIB's goals and their plan to meet them.
So Sheila, let's start with the purpose of the Workforce Investment Board. What does the WIB do in our region?
The West Kentucky Workforce Investment Board serves the 17 western counties of Kentucky, and we're one of 10 workforce investment boards that are served the employers and potential employees and individuals seeking employment with opportunities under the Department of Labor's Workforce Investment Act. We also oversee a system of career centers that are multi-partner agencies where we find a variety of employment assistance for either new jobs or better jobs or for those people that may have lost their work and are seeking unemployment or seeking a new job.
And what kind of jobs are opening up in the region for people to take up?
Well, in West Kentucky, over the last 5 years or more, we've had several dislocated workers. And when they come into our centers, many of them are looking for a change in occupations because they fear that if they've been in a specific company or area of manufacturing, that downturns in contracts can negatively affect their future. So they try to look at a career goal change for either some of the sectors that they see that are expanding or some of the areas of employment like healthcare that always seem to be there and have additional transition opportunities for them.
Now, the West Kentucky WIB has released a draft for economic development for 2012-2013 for the region. What are the major points of that plan?
Well, the plan addresses economic development growth, but it addresses also the workforce activities that are to be pursued by the workforce board. And working with business and industry, regional economic development, education, and other partner agencies that are part of trying to give people better futures by better careers and more opportunities.
So with that plan in place, what would be the goal for the next year?
The West Kentucky Workforce Board works very closely with all of our existing regional economic development efforts, as well as our community college system, Murray State University, and as well as the individual county economic development and chamber efforts. And we feel like that with the partnership that we have with the business community, as well as our local elected officials, that puts us in a wonderful position to try to take the high demands and the sector list that we're looking at and give greater opportunities for the citizens of Western Kentucky to choose career pathways that will bring them to a living wage and to excel in those areas.
Sheila Clark is the director of the West Kentucky Workforce Investment Board. The 2012-2013 draft is available for public comment until its submission to state officials for approval on April 11th. Paducah's homeless population has seen several changes in the past few months. The long-standing community Tent City was closed in December, and now the residents are finding new places until a permanent shelter is opened in the city. Rose Kristen Presson explores how homelessness in the more rural parts of Kentucky provides unique challenges and opportunities to those who find themselves without a roof over their head.
It's one of those cold gray days in Paducah where the rain doesn't ever seem to stop. For many, that means curling up in their homes. For Carrie Brown, that means her new trailer. It's the first place she's had to call her own since her uncle passed away last June. Carrie worked as a caretaker for her uncle, but when he died, that meant she lost her job. Soon after, she lost her house and was living out of her car.
Like everybody, it's just like one paycheck away from not having a place to live sometimes if you don't have family.
Carrie says she heard about Paducah's Tent City, but was worried about its security. Last September, she was at a soup kitchen where she met two young women who lived in Tent City. Carrie left her broken car behind and moved into the makeshift community. Since then, the city has shut down Tent City because of safety ordinances. Many of the residents were placed into transitional housing. Tent City Missions Coordinator Michelle Thomas has been integral in aiding the homeless of Paducah. She's been working to get people back on their feet for a little over a year. She says it all started when she took her daughters to play golf one day.
And I'm so good at that I hit my ball in the middle of the woods one day, and I found an empty camp. And that's really what first piqued my interest, is I just knew that was somebody's home. And I asked several people about it. My husband's lived here his whole life. He said, we don't have homeless people in Paducah.
Since then, Michelle has worked with local government, churches, activists, and financiers to try to establish a homeless shelter in Paducah. Paducah is more attractive than many of the surrounding towns for area homeless. Though still considered rural on a national scale, the relatively urban setting of Paducah promises more for them. Even Brown moved from Marshall County to Paducah after losing her home. It has more soup kitchens, food stamp offices, just more resources overall for the homeless. Davy King is the director of specialized housing resources at Kentucky Housing Corporation, which works to distribute finances to programs around the state.
We fund about 50 projects in the balance of state. And when I say balance of state, that's basically 118 counties in Kentucky, which is all of Kentucky except for Louisville, Jefferson, and Lexington, Fayette.
The state is split up like that because of Louisville and Lexington's sizes. King says the challenges for homeless seen in major cities is very different from rural areas.
In rural parts of Kentucky, we sometimes refer to the homeless as sort of the hidden or the invisible homeless.
KHC takes an annual census of homeless individuals in the state based on reported numbers at shelters across the Commonwealth. Last year, Region 1 of KHC's Continuum of Care, which includes the Pennyryle and Purchase areas, totaled at 325 homeless persons, with one of the most populated demographics being young women, single mothers, victims of domestic abuse. Brown, a 30-year-old, says she met many young women during her stay at Tent City.
It's more than what you'd think, too, you know. Because when I was out there, there were 7 girls out there. There was 2 19-year-olds that just didn't have family, didn't have nothing. They ended up back there.
Along with young women, one of the most common features of a homeless Kentuckian is what Michelle Thomas calls being precariously housed. This means couch surfing, living in cars, condemned buildings, barns, or even just living with relatives. She says that educating the public to these important aspects of homelessness is the biggest challenge people like her face. She says a stereotype of a 40-something male with substance abuse problems can cause issues when it comes to asking the public for help.
They have that same old mental picture of somebody in a cardboard box with a brown paper bag. That's not the face of homelessness anymore.
Thomas is now working to fundraise for a Paducah shelter she wants to open. She says she's allocated finances to open it, but operation costs are still unaccounted for. Meanwhile, she and others are working to provide resources to ex-residents of Tent City. Both Thomas and Brown repeatedly mention the supportive network of people helping Paducah's homeless.
I think that if I lived in a big city, I'd probably still be staying in the shelter or whatever. They probably wouldn't have the resources to help you get a job. And
those resources include classes on personal budgeting, parenting skills, and things like how to dress for a job interview. She says she's met people who have only hit a small rough patch and just need a little guidance to get back on their feet. She also met a man named Sammy, who lived for a decade in a makeshift shelter made from railroad ties. He even went through the 09 ice storm in it.
We come across people that don't even have an ID and don't know how to get one.
But mostly, she says the homeless's biggest need is a supportive base on which they can build their way back into a stable situation.
It's like a blink of an eye. You lose your hope. You lose your self-worth. Well, this is just happening to me because I'm just not worth it. You don't see your own value anymore. And then somebody has to intervene or it'll get worse. And that's when you end up with people that have been in a tent in the woods for 10 years.
Carrie Brown now works for a transportation company. She says her few months as a homeless person changed her perspective.
Yeah, I think I've changed as far as being nicer to people. And, you know, I think I've learned a lot. I grew up a lot.
Brown says she plans to become financially stable and to eventually help Thomas and the Tent City Mission in their pursuit of establishing a homeless shelter and resource center in Paducah. For WKMS News, I'm Rose Kristen Presson.
Tent City Missions will continue to fundraise in the coming months. For more information or to learn how you can help, visit WKMS.org. This has been Front Page PM. You might have missed Front Page AM today at 8:35. So if you'd like to hear any of those stories or any of these stories again, you can find them online anytime at news.wkms.org. You can also catch us for a special Front Page Sunday on the Commonwealth basketball culture and the Racers' historic season thus far. That's at 9 o'clock, right after Weekend Edition Sunday. I'm Chad Lampe. Thanks for being with us.